You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G. D-O-D-G-E-R-S.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. This is the daily podcast covering the world champion Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I am Jeff Snyder, Baseball Essential, rolling solo again today. Vince Semperio of Chavez Ravine Fiends is not available, but will hopefully be back with me tomorrow. So it's just me today. And I'm going to talk with you about some rumors about Trevor Bauer. And then I'm going to respond to an email from a listener about Kike Hernandez. A lot of different questions about Kike and how he relates to some of the other free agents on the market. So that's the plan for today. But first, I want to remind you, please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. And when you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. All right, so there were reports on Wednesday that the Dodgers are monitoring the market for Trevor Bauer. And, you know, we haven't talked a lot about Trevor Bauer this offseason. We've kind of known he's a possibility for the Dodgers. You know, he's definitely the top pitcher on the free agent market. And the Dodgers, while starting pitching isn't their top priority for the offseason, you know, Trevor Bauer is, we've talked about how hard it is to upgrade a good team like the Dodgers. Trevor Bauer would be an upgrade to the Dodgers rotation. You know, he wouldn't be, I'm not convinced that he is as good as he was last year because he was pitching in the NL Central, and I do believe that both Central divisions were pretty weak. And also there's questions about whether he was, you know, doing something to get extra spin on the ball. You know, I think that's something most pitchers do. And so, but he's just always been one to experiment with things. And so he even more than other pitchers, is somebody who I would like to see more than 1 year of that kind of performance before I'm really going to buy into it. But I do think he's a good pitcher. He was drafted high out of college. He's been a prospect. And honestly, for me, the bigger question, and I think for most fans, has a lot more to do with his personality than with his pitching. I think it's unquestionable that he would slot into the Dodgers rotation somewhere and make it a better rotation. You know, there would be questions about who does that bump to the bullpen, if, you know, maybe two guys, because they already have six starters without him. Do they then use one of those other starters like Gonsolin or somebody in a trade? You know, there are a lot of question marks that it would raise, but he would improve the team. You know, like I said, I don't know if the reason Vince and I haven't talked much about him is because we don't really know what to say, because, yeah, he's got an abrasive personality. He's not super likable. And, you know, I don't know. I get those concerns for sure. I am definitely more concerned with what he would do to the clubhouse chemistry than whether the fans would like him. I think for the most part, we as fans are pretty good at being happy when the Dodgers succeed, regardless of the personalities or political views or whatever of the team we're rooting for. There's definitely lines. Different people draw lines in different places. For me, I don't think Trevor Bauer has necessarily crossed any of those lines where I could not get on board with him being on my favorite team. I know one of the... I don't know. That I understand why female baseball fans would have concerns, because he has shown a tendency to be... something, you know, I've never been a woman, so it's hard for me to know. But I can understand why women would not like him and would not feel comfortable with him on the team. That said, you know, I do think some of it's overblown. There was a story a year or two ago about on Deadspin, maybe, about him harassing this teenage girl with 62 tweets in 24 hours or something. And the fact is, most of those, he was hitting reply to a thread. He was definitely being obnoxious. And I do think some of his followers did some harassing, but he only actually tweeted directly at her a couple times. The rest of them, it was just, he was responding to a thread that she was in. And so I think we need to be a little bit rational when looking at those situations. That said, if I was a confidant of Trevor Bauer, somebody who had his ear, I would be constantly saying, dude, stop being such a jackass on social media. But it's his brand. He likes it. So whatever. So, you know, if the Dodgers are really kicking the tires on Trevor Bauer, I think it would be because his market is not developing the way he wanted it to, which partly, you know, maybe this will be the wake up call he needs to realize, oh, wow, I just won a Cy Young Award and teams still don't want to sign me just because I'm kind of an a-hole. Maybe I should be less of an a-hole. I don't know. I don't know if he has that sort of self-awareness or not. If the Dodgers do go after him, I think it'll be because the price is right. And if that's the case, you know, whether they can get him on a long-term deal for a low AAV or a short deal for high money, if the price is right, it's one of those things where I defer to Andrew Friedman. I think he understands both sides of the coin. I think he understands the clubhouse chemistry and how important that is. And who knows, maybe being in the clubhouse with those guys might be good for Trevor Bauer. I don't know. But at the end of the day, for the most part, anything that's going to make the Dodgers better, I am okay with. And so I think, as of right now, as I'm recording this on Wednesday night, January 20th, 2021, I think I would be okay under the right circumstances if the Dodgers were to sign Trevor Bauer. But he is polarizing even in my brain to where I don't know that I would agree with myself tomorrow or next week. But, you know, it is interesting, and we have to allow for the possibility that all this is a plant by his agent to get other teams interested, because that is one of the Dodgers' main roles in free agency, is being the team that everybody plays other teams against to try to get the best offer they can. So maybe the Dodgers are interested, maybe they're not. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, my goal, without selling their soul, I want the Dodgers to put the best team on the field. And I don't believe that Trevor Bauer would cross the line into soul selling territory. So I'm okay with it. So I think that's all I have to say about Trevor Bauer right now. Maybe Vince and I will talk more about it on a future episode if things get more serious. But I'm going to come back in a minute and I'm going to answer an email from a listener with a bunch of conversation topics about Kike Hernandez. So keep it locked on Dodgers. All right, so I got an email from a listener named Douglas Stanley. We've heard from Douglas before, and appreciate him writing in. And he wrote in with a bunch of Kike Hernandez questions that are also kind of Marcus Semien questions. And so I kind of just wanted to go through Douglas's email and give my thoughts. He has a lot of good thoughts, and some things I agree with, some things I don't agree with, and some things that he's genuinely asking questions and wanting my opinion. So here I am. So he says, hey guys, a bunch of Kike Hernandez questions. And then he gives a caveat. He says, first, I absolutely love Kike. I think his enthusiasm is contagious and he's a great clubhouse presence. And yes, I still put stock in that. I learned from your podcast that he is the best defensive second baseman in the league. It seems like he'd be the type of guy a team would want to keep. First of all, Douglas, I want to say I totally agree with you on the clubhouse presence. I think that's important. I think a lot of times it's overblown. I think it's an excuse that, not an excuse, but it, you know, when people want to make somebody seem better than their on-field performance showed, they point to clubhouse presence or the intangibles or whatever. But I think Kike is, without a doubt, He's enthusiastic. He's excited. He's well-liked in the clubhouse. I think everybody's happier when Kike is around. So I totally agree with that, that there is some value in that. I think more value is and should be placed on what a guy does on the field, but there is some value in the clubhouse presence. So going back to Douglas' email, he says, when I hear about the Dodgers being interested in guys like Marcus Semien, I'm left scratching my head. Why would you want to bring in a mediocre hitter to not play his preferred position? Don't we have that option already? And then he says, take money out of the equation. Who would you rather have on your team, Marcus Semien or Kike Hernandez? And for Douglas, he says, the answer is obvious. And he says, who would you rather have at third base? And, you know, the bottom line, I think Marcus Semien is probably a better baseball player than Kike Hernandez. Kike is very good defensively. I had Mark Simon on, and he said, in his opinion, Kike is the best defensive second baseman in baseball. But like we talked about with Mark, you have to be able to hit too. And Marcus Semien really only has one season as a great hitter, but he's been more consistent than Kike. If you look at their OPS pluses, you know, basically since Semien became a regular, his OPS plus has been 98, 99, 97, 95, 139, 91. So other than his one great year, he's been, you know, roughly just slightly below average offensively. Kike, on the other hand, since he came to the Dodgers, his OPS plus, 131, 64, 92, 117, 87, 83. And so he's been a lot more ups and downs. And at the end of the day, Kike's career OPS plus is 98, and Semien's career OPS plus is 105. So Kike is slightly below average, Semien's slightly above average. Defensively, they're both very good. And, you know, one advantage that Semien has is he's faster, gets more stolen bases, more triples, more extra base hits. He's, you know, I don't want to say he's a better hitter than Kike, but he's a slightly better hitter than Kike probably, and definitely brings more value on the base paths. Kike has always been one of those guys who I'm always surprised that he's not fast, but he's not. He's just kind of average speed, which is surprising. So if you look at their career wars, Semien has about 80% more plate appearances than Kike, but even if you went on a per plate appearance basis and look at their war, Semien has 22.3 career war in 3,600 plate appearances. Kike is 10.7 career war in just over 2,000 plate appearances. So even if you multiply that by 1.8 to get to roughly the same number of plate appearances as Semien, he's still behind about, you know, 22-19. That's on Baseball Reference. FanGraphs, they're both lower in war than they are in Baseball Reference, but the comparison remains about the same. Semien is, on a per plate appearance basis, a little bit better than Kike. Is he better enough to justify spending a lot more money? No. And you know, like Douglas said in his email, taking money out of the equation. Yeah, if you take money out of the equation, I think I'd probably rather have Semien. If you factor in the money, you know, the fact is Semien is showing up. He's considered one of the top free agents, and Kike is looking for a one-year deal. Taking money out of the equation, I'd take Semien, but with the money, yeah, I might rather have Kike back. Douglas asks, is Semien significantly cheaper than re-signing Kike? Probably not. I think that Semien will cost more than Kike. So that is another point in favor of Kike. Douglas' third question, do you think Semien is a better hitter than Kike? I guess I already answered that. But Douglas says, I truly believe that with more playing time, Kike's hitting would improve. The fact is, Kike's gotten a lot of playing time. He's gotten, you know, in 2018 and 2019, he got close to 500 plate appearances, which isn't full time, but it's plenty. And he had one good year and one bad year. So I don't know that it's a playing time thing. Kike is very streaky. It used to be that he was very good against right-handers, and then he turned into only good against left-handers. So I don't really know Kike, and that's part of the concern about Kike is he's so inconsistent that giving him an everyday job. Like I said to Mark Simon when we were talking, actually, I don't know if this part made the cut, but it seems like Kike is maybe cut out to be a starting second baseman on a lesser team just because a team that can get away with a little bit worse defense. So that's with the idea of Kike as a second baseman. Sorry, I had to take a drink there. And I don't want to edit out that break because, you know, that takes more time. So you got to listen to me take a drink. But when we're talking about second base, if we were talking about signing Kike to be the second baseman or signing Semien to be the second baseman, that's with the assumption that they're doing something with Gavin Lux, then, you know, yeah, maybe I'd rather have Kike, probably. But I don't think that Kike is going to get the starting second base job for a team that plans on winning the World Series. Douglas asks about what about third base? And he says, can't Kike play third base? One would think that the things that make him the best second defensive second baseman in the league would make him successful at third. The jumps he gets on the ball, his speed, his range, his glove, not to mention his absolute cannon of an arm. Wouldn't he slot it in third? Does he not want to play there? And I think maybe Douglas is one where I disagree with you a little bit, because I don't think third base and second base are actually very similar. The jumps, you know, one of the things that Mark talked about when I had him on the show was Kike's positioning, and he plays a deeper second base so that he does have a chance to actually sprint after ground balls. At third base, you don't have that option. And so I feel like some of Kike's defensive value gets lost at third base because his speed, his range, all those things don't really apply. That they call it the hot corner for a reason. A lot of that is reaction time. I have no doubt that Kike could be a solid defensive third baseman, but I don't think it translates directly from second base because so many of his attributes would be wasted. He has obviously has plenty of a strong arm to play third, and he could be a fill-in at third. But my bigger concern about third base is an offensive position, and Kike just doesn't have the bat. Even in his good years, he's been barely good enough to be a third baseman. So even if he played the best he's played offensively, he's barely good enough to be a third baseman offensively. And that's if he was good defensively. And so for me, third base, Kike at third base just doesn't make sense. So Semien makes sense to me. And I know this is the third episode in a row we've talked about Marcus Semien, and I've gone back and forth, as you know. And for me, you know, if the Dodgers couldn't re-sign Justin Turner, Semien is a decent option at third base. He's a slightly better hitter than Kike. Semien isn't a good enough hitter to be a starting third baseman either, as far as I'm concerned. And so that's why, in the end, I start thinking, okay, maybe I'm not really on the Semien train at all, because, you know, if they put him at second base, okay, you don't need as much offense from second base. I think Semien could be a good defensive second baseman because he's a good defensive shortstop. And so, yeah, he'd probably be fine at second base if they were planning on moving Gavin Lux in a trade or whatever. If they're talking about third base, I'm not on the Semien train, but I'm also not on the Kike train for about the same reasons. As for Douglas's next question, he says, I understand Kike's desire to be a full-time player, but wouldn't everyone prefer to be part-time on a contending team than a starter on the Royals? It's not like he needs the at-bats to secure his Hall of Fame spot. I don't think so, Douglas. I think baseball players want to play baseball, and I do think there's a lot of value. But I think maybe the fact that the Dodgers already won the World Series, Kike already has his ring, maybe that plays a little bit, that now he needs to do what's best for him. And in a way, it would be silly for him to come back to the Dodgers where he's not going to have a starting job. An everyday job, if there are teams out there wanting him to play every day, be a full-time player. Financially, you get paid more if you are a starter. And so, you know, if the Dodgers were to bring him back as a super utility guy, which I don't even know if they have that spot available, because unless they, you know, because Chris Taylor is filling that spot. Taylor doesn't really have a starting role anywhere. If they did move Lux, I guess, and so they wanted Kike to be the second baseman or whatever, or Taylor to be the second baseman and Kike to be the super utility guy, maybe there's that. But at the end of the day, Kike's going to get paid more as a starter. And so I think a lot of that's what it boils down to. Kike has made some money in his career, but he's 29 years old, and he is he needs to cash in on his value. While, you know, baseball players have short careers, and there comes a time when every player needs to get that money. And this year and next year, you know, there's rumors that Kike's looking for a one-year deal as a starter, where he wants to establish his value and then go back to into free agency next year. And if that's the case, you know, good for him, because he's at that age where, you know, he's not going to have too many more free agent options, free agency periods to make that money. And so he needs to get his money, because his career is going to be over in, you know, 5 or 6 or 8 years or whatever it is. And then he's going to have the rest of his life as a husband and a dad. And he's going to want to be set for life, so that he can, that's why you become a baseball player, so that you can retire at 30 something and live the rest of your life comfortably. So I get that. Just looking through the rest of Douglas's email, he talks some more about third base. And I think I've said that, you know, and maybe being a part-time starter at third base and then a utility guy the rest of the time. I really don't think he's going to be interested in that kind of role, like I said. And Douglas concludes with, it seems like us losing Kike is a foregone conclusion, but with the new baby, the last thing he wants to do is pack up and move to Cleveland or some other godforsaken place. And, you know, I understand why Douglas is using Kansas City and Cleveland in the examples here. But, you know, there's rumors that the Red Sox are interested. There's rumors that the Mets are interested. And so there are some decent organizations with decent potential that are interested in Kike. And so it makes sense. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for him to come back to the Dodgers. But as of right now, it does seem like he wants a starting job, and that's going to happen somewhere else. So, Douglas, I appreciate your email. I respect your thoughts, even though, you know, obviously a lot of it I do agree with. In the end, when you do factor in money, I'd rather have Kike than Semien, I think. But, yeah, I don't know that the fit is there on Kike's side. I think if Kike was okay with continuing to be a utility guy, I think the Dodgers would be more likely to re-sign him, but I think they know what he's looking for, and he knows what he's looking for. And the fact is, the Dodgers probably don't have that to offer. So I think that's about all I have to say for today. Not a lot going on in Dodgers news for sure. In baseball news, nothing major. Michael Brantley, there were rumors on Wednesday morning that he was going to sign with the Blue Jays along with George Springer. And by the end of the day, it looks like Brantley is re-signing with the Astros. Either way, doesn't really matter. I've said on Twitter that I'd like to have Michael Brantley. I know there's not actually a fit with the Dodgers. I think he's a very good hitter. It'll be interesting to see if the Astros can put together a competitive team next year. Other than that, I don't think there was a lot going on in baseball. And so it was just a quiet day. Like I said, hopefully Vince will be back with me tomorrow. We can talk one more time this week, and maybe there will be some news to talk about. Oh, actually, one other thing that I did want to mention, following up on Don Sutton. I got a DM from Joey Delgado on Twitter. Thanks, Joey. And he sent me a little snippet from Fred Clair's book about the end of Don Sutton's career. And I've been meaning to read Fred Clair's book, and I just haven't yet. So I appreciate Joey sending this over to me. I knew that there was some sort of drama when he left the Dodgers in 1988. But I didn't know what it was, and so I didn't mention it on yesterday's episode. But Fred Clair lays it out a little bit in his book. He says, Sutton started 16 games for us that season, winning 3. The highlight for him was a 4-0 shutout over the Cubs on April 27th with Alejandro Peña getting the save. Don's final start came on August 9th in Cincinnati after he had returned from a one-month stint on the disabled list due to a sprained right elbow. We lost to the Reds 6-0, and after the game, I met with Tommy Lasorda in his office in the visiting clubhouse. Tommy was adamant that Don could no longer help us, and I agreed it was time to make a move. We decided to bring Ramon Martinez up from Albuquerque to replace Don in the rotation. Don had been the role model we expected him to be in the spring and had given us a veteran presence during much of the season while Martinez gained experience at AAA. But now it was time to make the switch. I met with Sutton the following day and told him of my decision. It wasn't easy, I said, because of his many contributions to the Dodgers, but in my opinion, it was necessary. I gave him an option. If he elected to announce his retirement, we would make the announcement in that fashion. Don wanted to know if a retirement decision would include a guarantee he'd continue to be paid for the rest of the season. I told him that just wasn't possible. It would set a bad precedent in my mind to pay off the contract of a retiring player. Sorry, I told Don, the only way you will be paid is if you are released. Thinking of Big D, Don Drysdale. When Drysdale announced his retirement in August of 1969, he was not paid for the remainder of that season. Even so, with only a couple of months to go, I should have backed off the point and enabled Sutton to announce his retirement as opposed to giving him his release. When we won the World Series, I made a point to invite Don and his wife Patty to be our guests for a trip to the White House, and I even joined them for breakfast one morning on the trip. Even so, I have the feeling Don never forgave me for the way his departure was handled, and quite frankly, I don't fault him for his feelings. So that's kind of how Don Sutton's tenure with the Dodgers ended. He hasn't been a visible member of the Dodgers family, basically since he left. And maybe that's part of the reason, like I mentioned, he was broadcasting for the Braves and the Nationals. And so maybe it was just that he didn't have time, but maybe there were still some hard feelings. There's also rumors that I saw that Sutton had talked to somebody with the Astros about a potential front office job with them, and that maybe that caused some of the drama between him and Fred Clare. Clare doesn't address that here, but that might have been part of it. So, you know, the end of Don Sutton's Dodger career was complicated, and, you know, most of life is complicated. So, but I thought that was big of Fred Clare to admit that he probably should have handled it differently. And I don't know if he and Don Sutton ever got a chance to make up before Sutton passed away, but again, I appreciate Joey for sending that along to share a little bit more information there. So I think that's going to do it for today. Thank you all for listening. If you haven't done so yet, please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. If you have Apple Podcasts, go ahead and subscribe there to help other people find us. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Semperio, and I'm on Twitter at Snydog. DMs are open in all of those places. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com, and our phone number for voicemails or texts is 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree, you just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
D. I say D-O, D-O-D-G-E-R-S, the team that's all hard. All heart and all thumbs, they're my Los Angeles, your Los Angeles, our Los Angeles. Do you think we'll really win the pennant? Bye!